Ethiopia, and there's all kinds of different information that people gave us on different experiences of discrimination. Here I talk a little bit about refusal to treat or avoidance of contact, which are very common experiences that people have of discrimination in the healthcare system. So for example, I have a friend who told me about a doctor who refused to let her have a pap test because he said it wasn't necessary because she was gay. The second story is interesting. It's a story about a woman who was a patient in a rehab center, and she was in the newspaper. She was an out lesbian and active in her community, and they did a story on her in the newspaper. And the nurse talked to her. And she said, "Yes, was that you?" I said, "Yes, it was me." From then on, I couldn't get anyone to help me out of bed. It was time I learned to get back into bed myself, but it was hard because the pain, you know. But that was the end of that. And we hear, you know, the strength and resilience of seniors, and you know, we understand this a lot from the way seniors are. You just have to kind of deal with what's given to you, right? So it was time, you know, the way she says it was time I learned to get out of the bed myself anyway, as a way of coping and surviving. And the last one, I had a doctor I had to go in and see. And once he found out I was gay, he said, "Okay, you're fine, I'll sign the paper." He didn't bother to give me a check. It's a particular issue here that we spoke with many people who talked about the issue of home care workers coming into their home. And one of the things that's really important for all of us, but particularly important for seniors, is that concept of home. And that people have kind of created throughout their lives a home as a symbol of safety for them. So they experience homophobia and heterosexism out in the world, in the work world, in their social world, in their families of origin. But people have, you know, as they age and as they create a life for themselves, that they create a sense of home as a safe space. This is not true, of course, for young people if they're in their homes with their families of origin, that their homes may be very unsafe places if their family members are homophobic. But for seniors, this idea about home as safety is really important. So to have to open your door to a home care worker who may or may not be discriminatory is a real vulnerability for seniors. And many seniors told stories about difficulties they faced because, you know, it's one thing to go to the doctor's office to face discrimination, it's another thing to have that in your face at home. And a lot of people, therefore, refuse service because they don't want someone in their home. This is just an example. I don't want anybody coming if they have great prejudice because that'll be a shock to them and to me. And it's been very interesting, though, because some of the caregivers have had their own religious agendas when they come. And it's been very fascinating that they, you know, if those agendas are clicked in, and I had one lady who's going to save me from this blasphemous thing. With respect to invisibility, these are people who work in this system, and they spoke about invisibility. I've been working with caregivers for the past 12 years, and never, never have we stopped to think about gays and lesbians. No one has ever told us that their experiences could be different, or that they needed something. Never. And the second one, I've been at many seniors' meetings and I raise it and it's just like a lead balloon, there's a dead silence. In terms of heterosexism, assuming heterosexuality, here's a couple of quotes as well. I think it's important that they know I'm a lesbian, but anybody you're talking to you want some help from, then they need to know you're gay or lesbian. Otherwise, they kind of assume you're straight. From their training, I hope they know that you're not necessarily straight. And healthcare workers need to be trained that lesbians and gays are just part of the groups of people they will encounter. I was in a 12-step program. I talk inevitably. I mean, I might not start out to give a talk that mentions I was gay, but it became very difficult to talk about recovery without mentioning that I was gay. And finally, I also find that in home care, workers have a great deal of difficulty discussing or addressing the issue of sexuality of the client. It's a problem for the workers, and many times workers don't ask anything. We think perhaps if a person is alone, it's just a choice. It's not related to their sexuality. And this is one thing we talk about a lot, that in senior care generally, we tend as a society to see seniors as asexual. So particularly in institutional care, we often hear about the sexual lives of seniors of all sexual orientations being ignored. And in a context or environment in which sexuality is not discussed and seniors are seen as asexual, it's hard to find an inroad to talk about sexual orientation. I just want to end with this one quote I mean, I think that there's lots of things we can do in terms of education and advocacy for political voice, but I think what Bill had said about openness is really important. Okay, and this quote, I think, says it all. I think that what a lot of people feel is the fear that they can't be out, that it won't be safe to be out, that what is required in order to create a kind of safety is some proactive reassurance that this is an open climate. And at minimum, this is what we need to do. It's what we need to do in the health and social service system, but it's also what we can do as public citizens. If we create an environment of safety and openness, if we start the conversations first, if we have visible ways for us to identify that we're open, then this will mean a lot for people and provide some comfort so that people know that we are safe individuals to speak with and to come out and to support folks. So, thank you.
Sick of big corporations shoving overpackaged, overpriced, overprocessed, hormone-injected, monocultured food drenched in workers' blood? Want an alternative?
Le Frigo Vert, a collectively run natural food cooperative, is happy to announce our downtown store at 2130 Mackay will be open Monday to Thursday, 11 to 7, all summer long.
Also, feeling fresh? Join Le Frigo Vert's community-supported agriculture project for fresh weekly or bi-weekly organic food baskets.
Cet été, pour une alternative des corporations et leurs produits, magasinez à Le Frigo Vert. Pour la première fois, nous sommes ouverts tout l'été, de lundi à jeudi entre 11h et 19h. Aussi, inscrivez-vous maintenant dans notre projet de panier d'avoir les légumes biologiques chaque semaine ou à tous les deux semaines. Pour plus d'informations, contactez LFV à Ken.org
or call 848-7586.
Breaking the sound barrier from Montreal to Beirut, a benefit concert for an independent media initiative of CKUT's Community News Collective, Wednesday, June 8th, with performances from Euphrates, Montreal's Iraqi hip-hop crew, the Afrobeat sounds of the Arc of Infinity, Montreal dub poet Kai Kello, the rhythms of DJ Andy Williams and DJ Tashish, and also the screening of Indie Media Beirut's film Leaded on Leaded. That's Wednesday, June 8th at Al Salon, 4388 Saint Laurent. Doors at 9 p.m., $5 to $10. Organized by the Howl Arts Collective. Info 514-597-0982. This is a CKUT co-presentation.
There is this thing. Do you realize
what is?
There is this thing. Do you realize
consciousness is affected?
There is this thing
on.
There is this thing going on. Do you realize
our consciousness is affected?
There is this thing going on.
What is called
the news brought to you live.
That does it for Off the Hour here on CKUT 90.3 FM, produced by the Montreal Community News Collective for production assistance tonight from Liz and Sheila. Thank you, dues, to our guests and to all of those who make educational and inspirational radio here at CKUT possible. For more information, for a copy of anything you've heard tonight, and if you'd like to participate or support news produced by and for the Montreal community, please contact CKUT's Community News Department at 514-398-6788. That's 514-398-6788 or news at ckut.ca. Stay tuned. Native Solidarity News is coming up next.
Sick of big corporations shoving overpackaged, overpriced, overprocessed, hormone-injected, monocultured food. Sick of big corporations shoving overpackaged, overpriced, overprocessed, hormone-injected, monocultured food drenched in workers' blood? Want an alternative?
Le Frigo Vert, a collectively run natural food cooperative, is happy to announce our downtown store at 2130 Mackay will be open Monday to Thursday, 11 to 7, all summer long.
Also, feeling fresh? Join Le Frigo Vert's community-supported agriculture project for fresh weekly or bi-weekly organic food baskets.
Cet été, pour une alternative des corporations et leurs produits magasinés à Le Frigo Vert. Pour la première fois, nous sommes ouverts tout l'été, de lundi à jeudi entre 11h et 19h. Aussi, inscrivez-vous maintenant dans notre projet de panier d'avoir les légumes biologiques chaque semaine ou à tous les deux semaines. Pour plus d'informations, contactez LFA à Ken.org
or call 848-7586.
Breaking the sound barrier from Montreal to Beirut, a benefit concert for an independent media initiative of CKUT's Community News Collective, Wednesday, June 8th, with performances from Euphrates, Montreal's Iraqi hip-hop crew, the Afrobeat sounds of the Arc of Infinity, Montreal dub poet Kai Kello, the rhythms of DJ Andy Williams and DJ Tashish, and also the screening of Indie Media Beirut's film Leaded on Leaded. That's Wednesday, June 8th at Al Salon, 4388 Saint Laurent. Doors at 9 p.m., $5 to $10. Organized by the Howl Arts Collective. Info 514-597-0982. This is a CKUT co-presentation.
Because genocide against native people is still going on today all over the world.
Native Solidarity News. It's about you too. CKUT, CKDU, CFBEX, CFUV, CHFN, CHLY, CHMA, CHSR, CJLY, CJSF, CGSW Radio 90.
Based on land. Land is the basis of all independence.
Today is the International Day Against Police Brutality. Different mobilizations will be taking place across Canada. We're glad to have you, Tasha, on the line, talking about a film concerning a situation in the town of Saskatoon. In some ways, it was very shocking to the community of Saskatoon to learn of policing tactics that were being used against Native people in this community. Could you tell us a bit about your work, Two Worlds Colliding, and also how you came to make this film?
Sure. That's where I live. It's my home. And when the news came, you know, public in the winter of 2000 about Darryl Knight, this is an Aboriginal man who came forward with a story of being taken outside of the city limits on a very cold evening, wearing only a jean jacket, and was left there by two Saskatoon police officers. And the reason he came forward is he heard that another Aboriginal man had been found frozen to death near the same area where he was dropped off. And actually, this was all within the same week, and then a second body was found of another Aboriginal man in the same area. And so, of course, this caused a huge ripple through my community, but I think also through the country. I mean, this is a story that continues to make national and international news. And I was emerging in documentary filmmaker living in the city, and I remember just saying someone should be recording this, someone should be doing something on this. And a producer that I had worked with said, well, why don't you? And it just started from there. I had a camera and a crew that was willing to just take footage in the moment. And then we've approached the National Film Board, and they came on board. So, I think part of it was, in terms of being shocked, I think in some ways parts of the community were very surprised. And I think there's also, a feeling of people not wanting to believe, or at that time especially just didn't want to believe that this was possible. And, of course, there's a whole other segment of our community, that being the Aboriginal community, and many of those whom, had similar stories, had similar incidents, had, times of being, victims of police violence, and, stories of this practice of drop-offs was quite, they were quite prevalent throughout the community. Daryl Knight himself, told me he'd heard rumors, and he was one of the people that didn't think they were true until it happened to him.
31-10-4. Yes. As soon as I got outside, I seen two cops, and they must have thought I was the one causing the problems or something. Handcuffed me and took me to the car, and I'm thinking I didn't break no law, so I didn't do nothing wrong, and took me away. And they drove me out of town. Scared the heck out of me. I thought I was dead. All those rumors I heard in the past, they were all coming true. When they told me, Daryl, get the heck out.